VGMP.
Finally! Finally, VGMP is covering something up to date, something fresh, something that's a brand new release in this very special episode of VGMP DLC, where we review shorter episodes so you don't have to listen for a long time while we talk about teeny tiny little things. And finally, we are talking about a brand new release. Sadly, that new release is garbage.
We don't know.
I'm
going to
stop
yet.
Imitating The Rock now.
Yeah, but also we don't know that.
Yes,
yet.
We do. I've seen enough. I'm sorry that we've seen nearly 3 fucking hours.
2.5 hours. 2.5 hours.
That's nearly 3. You round up.
No.
Once you hit 2.5, you round up.
I'm fairly certain it's 2 hours and 25 minutes. So actually, we're closer to rounding down.
Ladies and gentlemen, today we are talking about a post-apocalyptic sci-fi western drama based on the series of role-playing games by Bethesda.
Which in themselves were based off of a
tabletop game.
Tabletop game. So this is...
Today we're talking Fallout.
Yes.
The TV series from, yes, from your friends at Amazon.
Yeah, so I want to preface that this is unusual for us because it's not actually... It is a video game and it's not a video game adaptation. It is a video game adaptation as in this adaptation is based specifically on the video games.
Yes.
But it's not a video game adaptation in a rare instance for us in that Fallout isn't originally a wholly video game property.
Yeah.
In fact, there is another short that we will cover at some point called Defenders of Dinatron, which was a 1992 TV pilot for a cartoon. Based on the game Defenders of Dinatron on the original Nintendo, the NES or NES, whichever way you want to call it, which in itself was based on the same thing Fallout is based on, right, which is the tabletop game GURPS. I can't remember what GURPS stands for. I don't know much about tabletop gaming. I know it's basically a rule set, but you can almost adapt it to anything you want.
It's like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, yeah. But the difference with GURPS, the thing that connects, say... Defenders of Dinatron and Fallout, even though they are slightly different properties, is things like Nuka-Cola and things like that, and some of the main premises of it.
Yeah,
you know, mutating via 1950s style science and stuff like that. So there are a lot of connections because they're based on the GURPS idea. But yeah, we decided we'd cover this, even though we normally wouldn't, because let's be honest. Who the fuck knows GURPS and who...
It's based on the game.
Yeah.
It even says based on the video game by Bethesda.
Yeah. It's just usually when we follow the lineage down, like, we just go, no.
But we're going to have this same problem when they eventually do the Metro 2033 film.
Yeah.
You can make the argument that Metro 2033, it was a book first.
Yeah.
But let's be honest, the film will be based on the game.
Yes.
Because... Probably. The book is not that well known.
Well, we had this issue with The Witcher, which is why we decided not to cover it.
Yeah.
Because The Witcher is not actually... they did say it was based on the book, so that gave us an out on that. But also the fact that The Witcher video games are based on the books. It was obviously a Polish book series first before it became a video game series. So we don't cover those.
Yeah. And I just love to bring patented Jamie hot takes, which is coming at you right now. Let's start with our history with the game itself, as we always do when we talk about these adaptations.
Yep.
I hate this game. I hate it so much.
Yeah.
Now, I've only tried to play one of them, which is Fallout 3.
Right.
But I have tried to play Fallout 3 about 4 times, and every time I get so painfully bored of it about an hour in.
What is it that bores you on it?
Okay, this is a... Right. There was a time around the time of Fallout 3...
Yeah.
...where every single Bethesda game looked the same.
Yes.
It didn't matter if they were different genres. Oblivion and Fallout 3...
Yeah.
...look and control and feel the same. And the way they look, control and feel is lame.
Yep.
I don't know what it is. I'm being a bit of a dickhead here just to try and crank the views up. Because controversy creates cash. I honestly, I know it's not, because I know Bethesda's a big studio. I mean, big enough that Microsoft have bought them out now, I think.
Yeah, they did, yeah.
I always felt that their games felt really amateur.
Yeah.
Especially Elder Scrolls Oblivion Fallout 3.
Yeah.
They had a real janky feel to them, and the heads-up display felt janky.
Yep.
And the controls were janky. They had really stupid mistakes in them. Like, I think it's either in Skyrim or Oblivion, where they've left in a flubbed take of the line.
Yeah, and then the actress goes,
"Hang on, let me do that again."
And then repeats the line.
Like,
and they never patched it out, I don't think.
You're making a triple A game here.
Yeah. Bethesda was always one of them companies that I never got into. Because the first time I ever tried to get into them was Oblivion. I got the Xbox 360. I got Oblivion not quite on release, but a couple of months later, because I'd heard so many good things about it. And so I want something to play on my new shiny console. Oblivion's meant to be phenomenal. Like, it was getting praised through the roof by everyone I knew, and in all the reviews, this is the best game ever. So I was like, cool, I'll buy it. I got it secondhand because I'm a cheap ass. And I played it. And it was one of them games where, luckily at the time, I was sort of in this middle period where I had plenty of spare time. So I was like, well, I keep hearing how good it is, so I'll keep playing it. And it wasn't until I got 50 hours in, and I was bored the whole time. I was like, okay, this is shit, but it's meant to be brilliant, so I'll give it a go. It's an RPG, it'll take some time. And it eventually got to a point where I was 50 hours in, and I was like, I'm 50 hours in, and I've not really enjoyed any of this.
Yeah, if you're not enjoying it 50 hours in, you're not going to enjoy it.
And to be honest, I know
you worked 50 hours, bro, but if you just make it that 52nd hour,
yeah,
that 52nd hour is where the game really hits its stride.
Yeah. Well,
how long is the game? 54 hours.
Yeah. Well, the problem was with Bethesda games in general, including Fallout 3, which is the one I've played as well, and Oblivion, is that they have this reputation for excellence. But when I play the games, the controls are janky. They're never smooth. They brought in a system for Fallout because it added the first person shooting elements because it had guns available where Oblivion didn't. When it brought that in, I can't remember the name of the system now, but there was a system where you can slow down time and pick which part of the body you want to blast. And it's very obvious that that's there because the aiming is garbage. And the game would be literally unplayable without that. The actual story is interesting. I'll be clear, I have never played the original two games, Fallout 1 and 2, which were by Interplay. They were very different because they were isometric RPGs. So they sound a little bit more my jam, if I'm being honest. But Fallout 3 was definitely not a good game. And I remember I played it on the PlayStation 3, which people can go, oh, well, that was your own fault for playing it on PlayStation 3. But my God, did the game love to crash. So it wasn't stable. The controls were bad. The graphics were quite good for what they were at the time. But that was about it. And the idea was good, but it was just so devoid of personality.
How ironic.
Yes.
Because that's what's wrong with the show, too.
Yeah. Now, I mean, let's be clear. That is a personal thing. That's not like, you know. That's
two fat old guys being like, I don't like the Fallout games.
But the thing is the issues with the technical problems with the controls and things like that, and the fact that it kept fucking crashing. That's not a preference issue. That's objectively bad. But you can tolerate stuff like that if you love a game enough. You know, quirks and things like that. Yeah, you can.
Look how much jank controls I tolerate in the Resident Evil games.
Yeah. So that's not really the main problem with Fallout. And let's be honest, the one thing I was hoping with this show is that Fallout as a concept has a really great premise. And I love the idea of what you could do with a Fallout series. And the benefit of a show is that you can just talk about that and you don't have to worry about the things that were wrong in Bethesda's game, such as janky controls. You can let the story talk for itself. So as much as I maybe shouldn't have done, I did have high hopes for the Fallout series based on the fact it had an interesting premise.
Yeah, I guess.
So Fallout Just so you're aware, obviously spoilers after this point. We've only seen the first two episodes, though, so we can't spoil anything past that.
Yeah, what we're going to do is we're going to watch two episodes at a time, record an episode.
Yeah.
So you'll be finding out the plot, such as it is, along with us. And you can hear us get all our predictions wrong.
Yeah.
Except we probably won't, because this episode has been... The first two episodes have been so predictable, I could have fucking... Oh, no, I'm not trying not to be nasty anymore. No. I'm a good person. Amazon have done a great job making this show.
So what Amazon have done is they've taken the producer and director for the first season of Westworld.
Jonathan Nolan.
That's it. No, sorry. Director's Jonathan Nolan. They've got the producer from Westworld, which famously only had one good season.
Mm-hmm.
They've taken the writer from Captain Marvel. And that definitely shows. And they've put them all together in this melting pot of let's create a Fallout series. The problem with this series, I'm going to state this off the bat, the problem with this series is pacing.
Because 100%.
One of the main issues that the first episode has, bear in mind the first episode is an hour and 20 minutes long.
It's basically a film.
Yeah, so it's basically a short feature. And the reason it's done that is so it can establish every character. The problem is, we don't need every character established the way it's done. Yeah. What it ends up doing, the first episode is quite boring. Because the problem you've got is it has 100 intros and no premise to hold you back, to like bring you back for episode two.
In this first episode, I did not need to see the outside of the vault at all.
No.
It should end with her leaving.
Which it does.
Yeah.
But
this shouldn't have been any of the Walton Goggins shit.
Nope.
I didn't need any of Aaron Moten's stuff. It should have played like 10 Cloverfield Lane. It should have had this claustrophobic feel of how trapped they are. But to be fair, I'm going to give them artistic license here. What I'm pitching is much more thoroughly depressing. They've chosen to do something different, which, to be fair, the game did not do from what I saw. Bin Man, I've only played the third one. They've gone with the vault is almost a utopian society.
Yeah.
Whereas my interpretation was the vault is this, like, desperate, you know, oh, we've had to lock ourselves down here to survive and it's miserable and we hate it, but we're trying to make the best of it type thing.
Yeah.
They're almost utopian, aren't they? Where everyone's all smiley and giggly and everything's very... I mean, when she gets to the surface, she's super like, you know, we can all work together sort of thing. Yeah. And everyone else is just like, bitch, this is the real world. So fair enough, that's artistic license. They've chosen to go a different direction.
I'll be honest, I liked that. That was fine because it was... The idea of the Vault Dwellers made more sense in that sense because they're meant to be... the best and brightest of America saving themselves so that they can come back and save the future. They are the Jesus of this world because they're going to come back and all the scum that have managed to survive on the surface, well, they can come back and bring America back the way it should be. It's a really pretentious, almost religious, cultish way of trying to keep what's current American civilization of the 50s, at least, alive and well in the future. And that also gives her a personality that plays well off of the others. So I will say that the characters all have distinct personalities.
Yes. Yeah, let me be clear, because I am going to say some mean things about this show. As far as we've seen in these first two episodes, none of the actors are the problem.
No, they're all fine.
The actors are all doing good jobs. Ella Purnell.
Yep.
I mean, Walton Goggins, I've never seen Walton Goggins be bad in anything.
No.
Kyle MacLachlan, Aaron Moten, everyone is doing the characters they've been asked to play really well. I'd also like to praise the art direction. The sets, I love the fact that they're actual sets.
Oh, they look incredible. It's such a lovely looking show in terms of its set design.
In terms of set and costumes and, you know, the attention to detail.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like I said, I've only got a passing familiarity with the game, but I noticed all the things, you know, the Vault Boys there, the Nuka-Colas there, the bottle caps that they spend. The problem with this, and I just got a sense of deja vu because I feel like we've had this conversation before, The big problem with this, it has two. One is the entire thing feels utterly devoid of passion.
Yeah.
It feels like what it is, which is a product.
A product made by committee.
Made by committee to sell. The other problem is, and this is not surprising given that it's the writers of Captain Marvel, it's massive tonal whiplash.
Yeah.
We all know that at the minute, thanks to the success of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the whole gimmick, basically Joss Whedon writing has become the dominant form of writing.
Yeah.
Which is to sprinkle your drama with all this comedy. But whereas in something like Buffy, it was done really well. And in a lot of the early MCU films, it was done well. We've reached a point where it is not done well.
It is not
done well here.
No.
The tonal... I'm going to pick out one scene from the second episode as my example that demonstrates this. There's a scene where Aaron Moten's character is... he's a squire for a knight called Titus. And I'm guessing these knights, they're from the game, aren't they? Because they're on the cover.
They're the Brotherhood of Steel.
Right.
I think, yeah, they're the big...
Big Hulking.
They're on all the covers for all of the different games. So if you haven't seen these, then you've definitely not played the games.
Yeah. And they go out, and the guy in the armor is, you know, cocky and stuff, and he gets attacked by a radioactive bear. The bear looks shit, by the way.
Oh, yeah, the CGI on that was garbage.
And this should be a good dramatic scene, because in the first episode, there is a suggestion that that Aaron Moten's character actually might be a villain, because his friend gets a promotion above him. We see that that upsets him, and then mysteriously his friend gets severely injured the next day.
Yeah, he stuck a razor blade in her shoe, and it sliced her feet open. She can no longer be a squire.
And it's not confirmed whether he did it or not. That's a good idea.
Yeah, I think he did.
Yeah. But it's a very good idea. What you now get here is he then doesn't immediately help the knight.
Yeah, because the knight's being a prick, but the knight's dying, and he's got the medicine there to save him, and he's just like, you know what,
even when he stood there when the bear first attacks and he's got the gun.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, cool, maybe there's actually going to be something to this show.
Yeah.
Where there's an actual character drama of this guy who actually seems a little bit like he might be a psychopath.
Yeah.
And it could be a commentary about the fact that a lot of times the types of people who join those sorts of military organizations tend to join for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
Not because they want to defend people, but because they want revenge or to take out their anger. And what happens instead is the big armored knight guy starts squealing like a little bitch and turns and runs away in what's clearly meant to be a punchline.
Yeah.
Running away going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. After we've spent all this time building up to him being really intimidating.
Yeah.
It deflates every ounce of tension from that guy's storyline.
Yeah.
Every ounce. Up to that point, they've actually done a good job of making the armored guys fairly intimidating.
Yeah, and now he's just a guy going, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit.
And
you're like, oh, really? Yeah.
And then
it's not funny either. That's the thing. If it landed as a joke, at least that it would have that.
Yeah, but it isn't funny.
It doesn't land.
And this is me making a prediction, and I might be wrong. You know, when we get to the end of the season, I might sit here and go, oh, look, I was mistaken.
Egg on the face.
I don't think they're actually going to do a villain arc for this guy.
No, because he's now, in the second episode, he's almost redeeming himself.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and she's clearly going to fall in love with him. You can see it on her face.
Oh, she's moist. She's moist for him.
Yeah. And it's like, no, this guy is a villain.
Yeah.
Like, or at least at the start of a villain arc.
Yeah. And here's the thing. I don't mind if they do a little bit of bait and switch where he joins their side as sort of a good guy and develops his bad guy arc from there. That would also be cool. Bear in mind as well that the Brotherhood of Steel are essentially meant to be the Nazis in this universe. Or at least one of the several forms of Nazis. Because they're stormtroopers.
Right. So, well, they're going to say they look exactly like stormtroopers,
yeah,
don't they?
So I don't understand why, like, and he's a bad stormtrooper. He's harmed one of his brethren, which they've been told they're not allowed to do. He's then let another one die, who he was the squire in charge of saving in any given moment. Now, you can argue that the guy was a dickhead and he deserved to die, because he was. and that he wasn't worthy, quote unquote. But that's that you're but still using
this
that
guy.
Yeah,
this guy
is awful.
His way on.
Yeah, he cheated his way to the point, and then he's like, "You are not worthy." It's like, dude, you're not worthy either.
So here's my prediction, and you can feel free to start writing these down, and at the end of the season, call me on them.
Cool.
This character will never get a comeuppance for what he's done.
No.
The show will quietly forget it and expect, by the end of the season, will be expecting us to root for this character.
Yes.
That's just one example. This happens throughout. Yeah. And it is a shame because the show has moments where you're like, okay, we might have something here. Mm. And then insists, as if we're not learning the lesson that the MCU is crumbling right now. It's finally over. People are just still trying to do that style. In the first episode, in the vault, when she marries the bloke and they go back to her room, we start building some tension. It's cool. You start getting all these little hints where you're like, something's not right here.
He's meant to be another vault dweller from another vault that she's married into for like almost dynasty interchange.
It's because basically they're inbreeding.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're trying to diversify the bloodline again.
Yeah.
Because one bit that is legit funny, even though I don't know if it was meant to be, they fully support cousin fucking in this show.
Oh, yeah.
Like, she's literally, like, talks about how much she's enjoyed having sex with her cousin.
But she can't be with him because it's
not,
it's
frowned upon.
But
can't be with him forever because of the biological thing.
Yeah.
And the cousin's probably like, but I love you.
Yeah.
You start building tension because there's all these
signs that he's not, that the guy she's about to, well, that she's married, isn't the vault dweller that he's showed
rude
to be.
Whereas all the others are quite polite.
Yeah,
you know, he is uncivilized. Like, after they have sex, he wipes his dick on her curtains.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, gross. That immediately gets deflated with an over the top fight scene that's clearly being played for comedy.
Yeah.
I tell you what they're doing. They think they're Paul Verhoeven and that they're doing that thing where that RoboCop does.
Yeah.
Where it's like, by making the violence so extreme, it satirizes it. No, it just feels like you don't know what you're doing.
You need a very specific style to do that. And unfortunately, it's the style is the one thing that Fallout is definitely lacking.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a style that allows you to appreciate the overt violence. Plus, it's already been done. You're not new anymore. Paul Verhoeven was new when he did it with RoboCop.
Yeah.
And it's telling that no following RoboCop films were ever as good.
No.
What I will say is, this series, the starting episode, certainly, and to be honest, a bit into the second as well, certainly the first episode, the dross that it goes through is because it just has loads of intros. We start with an intro of the real world, then we get an intro of her in the vault, and which is the longest portion, and what happens to her. Then we get an intro to Walton Goggins coming back from the grave. Then we get the intro to
Aaron Morton.
And then we get the intro to this doctor guy who's been raising a dog. And then it just starts chopping back and forth between them all.
Yeah.
And you're just like, what are we doing? Like, who am I supposed to be following?
They're trying
now
to do Game of Thrones, but the reason it hasn't worked is, if you think back to season one of Game of Thrones, at the start of Game of Thrones, all the characters are together. Think about it. It starts at Winterfell, where all the Starks are together. The Lannisters come to them.
Yep.
And so does King Baratheon. What's his name?
Yeah, I can't remember his name.
Ned Stark's mate.
The one who gets mauled by Boar.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they're all together. Then they all travel down to King's Landing together, right?
Yeah.
You get one split, which is Jon Snow goes up to join the Night's Watch.
Yeah.
Then, as the show continues, more splits come naturally.
Yeah.
Until by the time you're into about halfway through season two, you are following
multiple plot lines,
a load of different stories.
But you know who they are already,
because they started all together, which meant your pilot felt cohesive.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like a and don't get me wrong, to be fair to them and to respect them, I was actually talking to Benton about this the other day. Writing pilots is incredibly difficult.
Yes.
In fact, I actually think pilots are the hardest episodes of a show to write. I actually think they're harder to write than finales.
There's a reason why the pilot is rarely the best episode of a series. Mm. Because you've got to introduce everything. There's nothing, the audience have nothing that they can give you for free.
Yeah, and you've got to sell your concept quickly.
Yeah.
And it's why you tend to find in pilots, everything's turned up a notch. I always like to use Dexter as a good example. Dexter, obviously, the central conceit of that show is he is a serial killer, but he works for the police and he kills other bad people, yeah?
Yes.
In the pilot, you see him do his kill cycle about three times.
Right.
Literally the stalking, the planning, and the end result of killing. After the pilot, he only kills about two people a season.
Right.
On average.
Yeah.
Because the whole point is Dexter, he's not a bloodthirsty psychopath. He's not going around Texas chainsawing people. He's a methodical killer.
Yeah.
But they need to sell the concept in the pilot.
Yeah, if you just did it once and it's like, oh, well, this guy's just a one-off killer.
And it's a complete story. All pilots, this is my belief, all pilots, even if you're making a show that's got a long-running storyline, like, for example, The X-Files.
Well, the similar thing happened in Breaking Bad. It needs to have a beginning, middle, and end for the pilot.
The pilot for The X-Files has a complete story that resolves within the pilot, and then the seeds of the main arc begin.
Yes, 100%.
The problem with, and this isn't a Fallout-only problem.
No.
This is a modern television
problem.
Oh, it
happens. I found the same problems when I watched WandaVision.
Mm.
That had the same problems. There's fuck all really seeded in the beginning, and it's just waffle. It's waffle that if you know the MCU, you'll be like, oh, I remember this one. I know this person.
Yeah, we won't go into it on this, but we've talked at length about this, haven't we? About the fact that the problem with WandaVision is it doesn't, and we're not going to go into it, but it doesn't stand as its own thing.
Yeah.
Because as I've said to you, because I remember one of your big problems was Wanda's arc does not resolve.
No.
In that, and I said to you, you know, it doesn't. Her arc resolves in Doctor Strange 2.
The problem is, it doesn't really resolve there. She just suddenly jumps to villain in Doctor Strange 2. She doesn't start off as she was at the end of WandaVision.
I don't know, I'd argue she's full villain by the end of WandaVision.
She's not treated that way, though.
No, she's not, and that is a problem. And I'll give you that. Yeah. That is a problem with WandaVision.
Yeah.
To be honest, you shouldn't have had Agatha in it.
No.
You didn't need...
Well, Agatha's a good guy by the end of it, because she's trying to kill Wanda, and Wanda is torturing hundreds of people.
Yeah, but to be fair, she's doing it because she wants the power Wanda's got.
Yeah, yeah, but at the same token, she's still trying to kill the bad guy.
Yeah, I agree. At this point, that's something you either have to take or leave with the MCU, which is it doesn't stand on its own anymore.
No.
And some would say that's a good thing, some would say that's a bad thing.
The problem with Fallout is that it doesn't stand on its own either.
But it should, because it doesn't have anything else to support it.
Basically, if you don't know the games, you've got nothing you can get out of this. And here's the other problem as well. As I say, with all these establishing bits and bobs, the episodes are really long. Certainly the first two. I know they're the longest, because the first one's an hour and 20 and the second one's an hour. Mm. So we've watched 2 hours and 20 minutes of this world. We're nowhere near even a third of the way through.
No. Where the second episode ends, that feels like what should actually be the end of a pilot in a properly written show.
Yeah.
Because she's only just started the quest.
Yeah.
We've only got 8 episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
And we're at the end of the second one, and we've only just started the quest.
Yeah, we're a quarter of the way through. It's ridiculous. Also, here's the other problem. As I mentioned in the first episode, there's all the, you know, multiple intros constantly. Mm. But actually, the only one you needed was Lucy.
Yeah.
Because the perfect intro for the rest is in episode 2 when they all have the showdown at the town.
That would be a phenomenal introduction to the ghoul.
That would
be a phenomenal introduction.
We didn't
just
need
that voice, hey, Dark, or whatever it was he said. They all look over, and this. Because it harks back to Western thing. He looks like Clint fucking Eastwood.
Yeah.
This fucking guy in a cowboy hat and a fucking long coat on a rocking chair, obscured by dust so you can't really see him at first, stands up, but the silhouette is recognisable. I've been paid a lot of money to find you, or whatever it was he said. Something to that effect, wasn't it? Steps through the dust to reveal that he's a monster.
Yeah, but we've already seen it because of the intro we had with him in the first episode, which went nowhere.
That intro, don't get me wrong, it had a cool shot in it.
It did.
When they were riding the horse and multiple nukes were going off.
Oh, I meant the one when he was already a ghoul, when they dug him up.
Oh, no, I meant the very beginning of the show. It had a cool shot in it where they're driving the thing and all the different nukes are going off.
Yeah.
But, problem. Other than that being unnecessary, it just looks like Terminator 2.
Yeah. Well, here's the other thing as well. If we're going to see that shot, that's fine. But that then needs to be seeded later, not before we've even gotten to the vault world. That needed to come in as... whenever we start to learn more about, because we don't actually learn a lot about the ghoul in the first two episodes, but we needed to see him first at the town, and then whenever we decide we're going to learn more about the ghoul and he's going to become more of a major player, then we learn about his history. And
yeah,
I don't
flashback
mind
to it.
Flashback, fine. Yeah.
Start in the vault.
Yeah.
Start in the vault, yeah. Man.
And again, the scene where there's three other banditos or cowboys who've dug him up. And they offer him a cockerel because apparently that will show if he's gone mental or not. That makes no sense. Like, that whole scene was unnecessary.
Yeah.
Because this guy's been buried in the ground and fed intravenous juices.
Yeah, and I wasn't clear. I don't know if only the game fans are clear on this. Is the ghoul immortal? Because A, he's 200 odd years old at this point.
Yep.
And B, during their fight, he gets shot multiple times and it doesn't even seem to stagger him.
Yeah, it like winces a bit at most.
So is he immortal?
Also, he's getting smashed around by a massive metal robot man and he's not got any broken bones.
Leon S. Kennedy.
Yeah. But again, it like everyone else seems to be very fallible. Like, everyone else that, like, has limbs blown off. Gore comes quite readily in this series.
Yeah.
And yet this guy seems to be bouncing around like a pinball, doesn't even get a cut.
Yeah.
And there's no explanation for that.
Oh, I feel like such a prick. But just everything in this show is backwards. Because imagine how much more tragic it would be and how much cooler of a character the ghoul would be if we met him at the shootout. He's not a super sympathetic character yet. And clearly there's going to be a tragic backstory with his daughter we saw he had a daughter, didn't we?
Yes.
Imagine if we learned that as the season progressed and it would reshape our perception of him.
Yeah.
Because you'd go in going, oh, this hideous monster is some sort of evil bounty hunter or something.
Yeah.
And then you'd start learning these things and start to feel sorry for him. That's such a better emotional journey.
Yeah.
Than this.
Feels so backwards. This whole show feels really backwards.
But the thing is, I'm not... Because I want to be fair to Fallout here, and I'm going to sound like an old man. This is nearly all modern TV now.
Yeah.
It's all bad. We did Last of Us not that long ago.
Yep.
And that was the same thing.
Yeah.
Great art direction, great costume, great sets, and other than about one episode, emotionally flat.
No, I'd give it at least three episodes were good. But other than that, yeah, it was emotionally flat.
Like, we've lost... Because movies are the same these days.
It's because everyone's chasing the Marvel writing style. That's why. We don't want emotion. We want it to be funny.
We want memeable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I want to be able to make memes, man.
Talking of memes, one of the actors in this is a returning actor for the video game movie podcast. Moses Arias, I think is how his name is said. He was Hollywood in Noobs. Hurrah! And as of this release, Jamie, Noobs got released on Saturday and this released on Tuesday. So yeah, actually...
How fortuitous.
Yeah, and to be fair, I've literally found that out as we were watching that
didn't
he's
plan
in
it.
This. Because I saw him, I was like, I recognise that guy. How the hell do I know him from? And it turned out it was this. So Ella Purnell was also in another video game series. She's in Arcane, which is a League of Legends series that was on Netflix.
Walton Goggins is in the Alicia Vikander Tomb Raider.
Yes, he is. Yes.
This is all video game alums.
Yeah, but usually with only one, maybe two precursors. Mm. Like, they're not, it's not.
Yeah, just you wait for Neil McDonough to turn up.
Oh, God. It will happen when he does.
Okay, so Rory, based on what we've seen, where do you think this show is going? Make a prediction.
Okay, I think this show is going to... Honestly, I think it's going to be generic as fuck. She's going to go and try and find her dad. We already know that for some reason her mum is well known across the wasteland. We don't know why yet. I don't know how that's going to resolve, if I'm being honest. I don't think it's going to do anything particularly interesting.
it's going to be some bullshit where she's like the leader of a resistance movement, or that, or maybe even that she like launched the nukes or something.
Yeah, something like that. Well, she can't be because it's 200 years later.
200 years later, Walton Goggins is still alive.
Yeah, no, but he's
why,
the only...
Why can't a mum be a ghoul?
Oh, I don't
we've,
know.
We've seen in the trailer there's more ghouls.
Oh, yeah,
but... by the way, at the end of the first episode, it plays a trailer for the whole season.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
But clearly, because they knew that the first episode wasn't good enough to keep people
around. Yeah, they were like, please don't turn off. I know it's shit, but
I promise
get
there's more stuff coming.
Yeah.
Look, there's a dog in the next episode.
Yeah. The white nerdy man who is injecting himself in the neck and initially has the dog, I think he's going to be put into a robot so his voice will continue. I don't know. What, that's why he's got the chip in his neck. That's my prediction on that. Mm. I don't know that as a fact, but it just feels about right.
Yeah.
Because he's dead by the end of episode two, isn't he?
Oh, so one thing I do know about the Fallout games... Mm. Is that the boss of the first game is called Mastermind, and he is a head connected to a computer.
Oh, so he could become
what
Mastermind.
What if he's Mastermind?
Possible. Possible. I think the other three characters are just going to become nebulous friends, like by a proxy. You know, they're going to have to do this mission together. I think Aaron Moten is not going to have the villain arc that he should have. I think he's going to become a bland, like, hey, babe, what's going on? Mm. Like, with... Lucy and just be like, cool, let's, and it, because she's clearly moist for him, I think she's gonna find out she's pregnant from being shagged by the radioactive
wild man
that invaded the vault, and eventually she's gonna have to try and get her dad back before she's too pregnant to do it.
He's definitely dying in the Carl McLachlan. Ain't no way he's living by the end of this show.
No, but the fact that, and the main villain, I don't know what her jam is in this yet, but she...
What's her name? Moldavar or something like that,
isn't
it?
Something like that. Oh.
Which I'm sure has been used before. I think there's a villain in Doctor Who called Moldavar.
Maybe. Lee Moldaver, played by Sarita Chowdhury. Her character seems to know Lucy's mum, as everyone seems to. That's another one of them fucking things. Do you remember that was the problem with Tomb Raider? Tomb Raider had the same problem.
Know.
Everyone knows her dad.
I know. You're born into great... I hate those types of stories.
And again, I said it. Look, this is going to be the problem. This is like Lucy's story arc is very similar to Rey in the first of
the
new
Disney
trilogy.
Star Wars trilogy.
Yeah. And including some of the shots they do. I'm like, that's literally her in Star Wars at the beginning. When like there's a bit where there's a ship submerged in sand. And I'm like, well, that's just when Rey finds... the Star Destroyer in the sand in Tatooine. It's literally the same shot. I think she's going to have, you know, this arc where it turns out she's born into greatness. Rey ended up doing that. Oh, you're not just some random bitch from the sand. You are this person's daughter of great repute, blah, blah, blah. And it's a common thread in all of these.
Didn't they? Because I haven't seen the Disney trilogy because I don't like Star Wars as it.
I've only seen the first one, so I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I can't answer your questions.
Oh, fair enough. I was gonna say I think the fan perception and apparently what it was clearly building to was Rey was the Emperor's daughter.
I think that's what it became in the end.
Oh, I thought I heard they chickened out on that at the last minute.
No, I think that's what they made her into.
Right, okay.
I think, I don't know.
Somehow the Emperor has returned.
Yeah, and that's the problem with it, is she does this, I think that's what's going to happen with Lucy, you know, she's going to end up, oh, you're actually amazing because your mum was this, and that means you come from great lineage.
Yeah.
And this is a common thread in a lot of modern writing, certainly with, and I'm not trying to be weird, but with female-led series. When you've got a woman who is meant to be coming from a background that is of, what's the word?
Humble upbringing?
Yeah, a more humble upbringing. Something like, so for example, Rey is a peasant on Tatooine. Lucy is at least at a disadvantage because she's from a vault, so she doesn't have knowledge or experience of the real world outside. There's always this thing where it's like, oh, well, they don't really raise themselves. They are given greatness as per standard, and they find that they are meant to be as great as they are. Yeah. And it's like, why don't... I just want to... I love the idea of having a female lead, like Ripley.
Yeah.
Who You know, Rip
earned her greatness. Yeah,
yeah. It would have sucked if at some point in Alien it was like, well, Ripley, the reason you survived is because your mother was the king of destroying all aliens.
Yeah.
It would be like, what the fuck is this?
To be fair, I'm gonna. This is more interesting than talking about the show.
Mm.
Let me counterbalance that, because actually, I don't think this is a problem that just affects female characters. I think it affects just not great writing. Because I can think of three examples right off the top of my head that are the same thing but with male leads. And I'm not going to be popular for saying these.
No, go on.
Luke Skywalker does nothing to earn greatness.
That's true.
He's great because Ben Kenobi finds him, and then it turns out Darth Vader's his dad.
I will say, though, on the benefit side to Luke, he at least loses his fucking hand.
Yeah, he does lose something.
Yeah.
Neo in The Matrix.
Yeah.
There is nothing special about Neo. He's Neo because he's Neo.
Yeah, Neo is... And
the last one, which, to be fair, I think people would have mobbed me for this once upon a time, but this series has fallen into disrepute a little bit. Harry Potter.
Oh, right. Yes.
Harry Potter is great because Voldemort tried to kill him.
Yeah.
And they try and do this ironic thing where the only reason Harry is special is Voldemort heard a prophecy that Harry was the only one who'd be able to kill him. Therefore, Voldemort tried to kill Harry as a baby, causing the curse with the lightning scar that gave Harry the power to defeat Voldemort. So it's one of those ironic self-defeating prophecy things. But Harry Potter, he doesn't really do anything to be as great as... Think about it. He's not the smartest in the class, Hermione is.
Yeah.
He's not even necessarily the bravest, especially not in that first one. You know, Ron's the one who makes the sacrifice play in the big chess game, isn't he?
Yeah, he is, yeah.
Harry Potter's just... He's Harry Potter because he's Harry Potter.
Yeah. And you know what? Annoyingly enough, as much as I actually love the trilogy, I know you don't, Aragorn in Lord of the Rings. At least he's hardcore because he's gone out and lived a life as a, you know, as a rider. I can't remember what he's called, but basically as a vigilante. But
a lawman.
Yeah. But at the very end, it's like, oh, you're meant to be with Galadriel. Why? Oh, because you were born into greatness and you're. And it's just like, I was like, oh, don't ruin Aragorn. Yeah.
I would argue that, and unfortunately, this is. It's just a shame that we're getting more female protagonists now and it's affecting them because it's the wrong time. I would argue the problem isn't that it's female protagonists. I would argue that that type of writing is very old. Like you said, you've just given Lord of the Rings as an example.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings was written in, what, the 1930s, the
1940s? Like that. Early 1900s, at least, yeah.
There's definitely plays from, like, Shakespeare's time the same way.
It's hierarchy.
I think we've just finally gotten bored of that trope, but the problem is that happens to have coincided with the time where it's all women characters that are being given the trope.
I think there's that. However, I think it might be something else.
Right.
Because at least usually in the more traditional versions, and it doesn't necessarily mean that it's good because of this, but usually the male heroes, because of older storytelling, it usually was a male protagonist. They oft, like, as I said, Luke Skywalker had to lose his bloody hand. They had to do something or lose something to earn the right, even if they had were born into greatness.
It's why the first Thor movie works. Because Thor's born into greatness, isn't he? He's the son of Odin. Mm. The reason the first Thor movie works is it reverses that trope. Thor's a dickhead. He's an arrogant douchebag at the start of that film. And Odin goes, right, fuck you, takes all his powers away, makes him no longer worthy to wield Mjolnir, and literally casts him down to Earth and goes, figure it out. You need to prove that you are worthy.
Yeah.
And Thor has to learn humility and humbleness and teamwork and all these things before he's finally able to lift Mjolnir again.
Yeah. Well, I think the main problem, this won't be popular maybe, but let's be clear. The reason that modern writing is as bad as it is, even with using a traditional trope, and again, this is unfortunate because it has coincided with the rise of more female protagonists, but it isn't the fault of the fact that there's female protagonists. The main issue is that nepotism has risen quite strongly. It may have always been there. In fact, I'm fairly certain it always was.
Definitely in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Definitely.
But nepotism writing. Usually the writers weren't nepotists.
Yeah.
It was usually the actors or the directors. Now it's in the writers' room. And the issue with that is they can't just have someone rise from nothing.
Because it invalidates their whole existence.
Yeah, it's like you can't make it to this level. It is a classism thing, because essentially you can't rise to being the hero of the story from literal zero.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you must have some greatness innately in you.
Yeah.
Well, that's bloodline shit.
That is the myth people believe, isn't it?
Yeah.
I was always going to make it because I'm destined to make it.
But in this case, it's literally bloodline. In this, Lucy, something's happening with her mum. It's going to be something mum-related. In Star Wars, with Rey, it's because her bloodline was this. And you're right. With Luke Skywalker, it was because his dad was Darth Vader. There's always some... And even if you take it from Anakin Skywalker, who didn't have a dad, but again, he was always born into it because
of this. I mean, we talked over on Second Take Cinema. We've just done Phantom Menace recently, haven't we?
Yeah.
And we talked on that about how ludicrous it is that, like, they really overdo the Jesus metaphor with him, don't they? Where they're like, oh, she won't say who the dad is because it's almost like there is no dad.
Well,
it's
then he says like he was made of the Midichlorians.
Yeah, and he's even got more Midichlorians than Master Yoda.
Yeah.
And you're like, why though? Why? Oh, this kid's just great because he's great.
Yeah,
because
the Midichlorian, the magic thing, made the baby, so he is Jesus.
Although I suppose you could argue the fact that Anakin ends up falling to the dark side does reverse the trope a little, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
Because actually, here's this guy who, yeah, like you say, was born to greatness, was born to have everything.
Yeah.
And he actually ends up squandering it and becoming, I guess, fair enough. Yeah.
Though I will say, clearly, he does balance the Force, which is what the prophecy was.
Yeah, you've talked about this before.
If you want to hear how that works, go to Second Take Cinema and listen to our Phantom Menace episode.
Don't, though, because Phantom Menace is garbage.
No, but our episode of it.
If you can stand the fact that it is just about, it's about 2 hours of me and you slagging off Star Wars.
It's not that long.
So what I want to end this with is, I just want to reiterate one more time, it's not, none of what's wrong in this show is the actors' fault.
No.
The actors are all doing actually pretty good jobs. This is my first time I've ever seen Ella Purnell in anything, and she's good. I like her. She's got a good look. She's got a good aura about her, and she's doing the character really well.
Yeah.
But it all comes down to this question. If we were not forcing ourselves to watch this due to the fact we want to cover it for VGMP, if you were just being yourself, catching a new TV show,
yep,
and you thought, oh, Fallout's just come out, I'll give that a shot, and you watched what we've just watched,
yep,
would you come back for more?
I would have turned it off at least halfway through episode 2. And I would never have gone back.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree.
Yeah.
I'm not looking forward
to watching
the next two episodes.
I'm hoping, now that we've gotten the gang together a bit by the end of episode 2, episode 3 onward will start the story proper and it'll actually be good. But my hope for towards the end is that we can go, look, bear with episodes 1 and 2, because by episode 3 and 4, you're going to be loving this show.
Yeah,
that's,
to be
the
fair,
hope.
Wouldn't be the first show to do that.
No.
There's loads of shows where season 1 ain't that good.
Yeah. Well, I mean episode 1 and 2 to episode 3 and 4.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. I'm hoping at the end of the season,
we
might be able to say, well, actually, it does pick up towards the end.
Yeah, and I'd like to be able to say this series is worth it because it subverted our expectations, not in the way that they normally mean it, which is just piss everyone off, and that some of the stories gave us a twist that we weren't expecting, and that the story flows better. I'm hoping it's a shit pilot.
Yeah.
And it gets better from here. But only one way to find out.
Yeah, got to keep on watching. Keep those doggies rolling.
Yeah.
Well, everyone, thank you for listening. We'd love to know what you thought about Fallout, the TV series. If you'd like to let us know, please do feel free to leave a comment or email us on info.impalafilms@gmail.com, and we can have a look and see what you guys thought. Maybe you disagree with us. Maybe we're being complete and utter morons. Maybe you can tell us why we're wrong that the game sucks too.
We'll be back next week with the follow-up to this.
Yeah, we will be back in a week's time with episodes 3 and 4, and then 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 until the end of the season, or until one of us gives in and kills ourselves. Cyanide pill, baby, just like that guy.
It's Plan D.
Plan D. In the meantime, if you've enjoyed listening to this show, please do like, share, subscribe, etc. It helps us immensely. Please do check out our other movie talk podcast, Second Take Cinema, where Rory and I discuss the artistry of movies that we've seen before. We give them a second chance to see if they still hold up in a modern day and age, and discuss how they were made, you know, what themes they have, etc. It's a little bit more up its own arse than VGMP is, to be honest. You can also check out our audio drama series Haunted, the audio drama, which has finished its second season, and touch wood, the audience is loving it. We're getting really good feedback. We're so thrilled and honored to have so many people who are enjoying listening to the show. Make sure you check it out and catch up ahead of the release of our 2 summer specials later this year. And lastly, do stick around to hear a sneak peek of this coming Saturday's episode of VGMP, our full-length episode as opposed to a normal DLC. This is for Street Fighter 2, the animated movie.
Yes.
Which I haven't seen Street Fighter 1, so that's interesting. And the only thing that's left for me to say is turn off this podcast, go open your games console and put on a decent game, Alan Wake 2, and forget all about Fallout. Poor Rory is actually quite ill as we're recording this, but we're just so desperate to talk about Street Fighter.
But I'm never give up because I'm a Street Fighter, which is a song that was released in the 90s.
Oh.
Enough.
The camera cuts to Balrog, and then all of a sudden the buttons of his top come undone. Oh shit, is he gonna get involved in the fight? Just cuts, it never comes back.
Oh really?
Why is he bursting out of his top for no reason?
Can I tell you, this is a homoerotic movie.
I'm a welcome wagon, it's nice to meet you, friend.
There are so many close-ups of, like, rippling abs and bulging biceps.
And feet at the end. In the final fight, there's so much
slept
feet
through that bit.
My beautiful face is ruined! You bitch, I'll make you suffer!
Masked villains are always pretty cool.
I think the difference is M. Bison is, in terms of aesthetic, he's a military leader.
Yeah, it's because he looks like he should be in the YMCA. Because he's wearing tight red leather.
All I want to do is get rimmed by a perfect genetic soldier.
Bison's ass is mine.
No, Bison is a large...
No, Bison.
It's cattle, actually,
isn't
it? It's
a large cattle, yeah.
That's a good point.
You want something with big horns, my friend. You want a Texan Longhorn.
Now, can you imagine if the villain was called Texan Longhorn? That's
name.
actually a better name. I agree with you on that.
Game over, yeah!
Cyberpunk Studios.